Okay, today is February 3rd, 2006. My name is Michael Rodriguez. I am the Literature Librarian for Michigan State University. And I'm here to interview Steve Amick, whose book, The Lake, the River, and the Other Lake, was published this year, 2006, early 2006, though, right?
2005.
Or 2005, May. I'm sorry, yeah. But early, was it early 2005?
Yeah, May.
May, okay. And actually won a Michigan Notable Book Award. Is that right? Michigan it became a Michigan Notable Book.
You tell me.
I'm not sure if that's an award or...
It was noted.
Right. It was noted. Michigan. I mean, this is the Michigan Writers Series. So we, you know, I sometimes do these stock questions, but it's so obvious, you know, with poetry, we ask about Michigan, landscape, that sort of thing. But this is about Michigan. You know, this is a book that takes place very well. It uses the mythology of the Upper Michigan Territory in a very obvious way. It's not obvious; it's literal. Every other city is named except for the, and I'm not sure how to pronounce
it. Winneski.
It's Winneski, except for Winneski, which is. In some ways made up.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much is actually fiction. But Michigan, you grew up in Michigan, you grew up in Ann Arbor?
I grew up in Ann Arbor and was born in Ann Arbor, and we spent the summers, let's say, in the greater Traverse City area.
Yeah. You don't want to say what this is. And people have to be guessing at what town this
is. It's weird because to me, I would never read it as some kind of encoded thing where I took reality and then just changed the names. It's not a memoir in reverse.
Right.
It's there's been no attempt to bury anything other than, you know, I think both my publisher and my family prefer if I don't identify exactly where we're from, because in a way too, it's not just about that place. If I told you where our cottage was, you'd say, well, that doesn't have this,
but
and that doesn't have this. It's sort of an amalgam of a bunch of places.
Yeah.
And not intentionally. It's sort of done. You know, I think the way you write is often the way that you read. It's an accidental, unconscious sort of gathering of images that, you know, dream state almost, your grandmother's house or whatever. So if you really map it out, it's in a lot of, it's a lot of towns sort of shoved together. If you want to locate exactly where you can, where I placed it, once I had to think, well, wait a minute, where exactly is this? It does basically obliterate Manistee.
Well, I mean, if you look at a map of Michigan, there's so many places on the upper west side of the state that this could be a smaller inland lake, you know, just off Lake Michigan.
Right.
This is obviously many places. And the issues, of course, the issues are the issues that most of these towns have, too, with older residents coming to terms with money from Chicago, for instance, coming to their towns and doing what it does to the towns and so forth.
Yeah, and that sort of informs some of the larger issues in it about identity. What is this town if eventually this town is reliant, you know, totally on tourism and a strange combination of tourism and agriculture? The town's name literally translates to who are you and sort of a pig Ojibwe. Without being too heavy-handed, there's a lot of the storylines really have to do with people shifting sense of identity in a changing environment. And that's really what's going on, I think, in a lot of those towns, and that's probably why there is some resonance for people.
All the characters in the novel have identity issues as well. They're all figuring out who they are. And I'm thinking Roger Drinkwater, the first, I think he's one of the first characters, if not the first character in the novel, isn't he?
Yeah, and definitely I'm finding the most beloved
from
readings and stuff. You know, the guys want to be him and the women want to sleep with him, basically, who read it. I get a real kick out of some Ladies Home Journal book column that was online in iVillage or something, and it was on their list of literary hunks of the summer, and I thought, I wrote a bodice ripper? What is this? But whatever, you know? The other thing about the identity, interesting with Roger and with all of them, is that it's somehow tied to where they're from.
Absolutely.
You know, you're that person, you're a lake person, you're, mm-hmm. you know, it's all very much based on place.
And the whole idea of, you know, this is Native American territory, and he's the Native American of the book.
Yeah, they're noticeably absent.
Yeah, right. And he's struggling with all these issues right along with everybody else in very different ways, too. But what I was going to ask is, Michigan, you grew up here, obviously going to this place that you go to. You went away to school and came back.
Yeah,
this is an important place for you, obviously.
Beyond that, I think that I went beyond going to school and coming back. I went to school. I went to grad school. I lived in L.A. I lived in New York for several years and did all kinds of things. And when I was younger, I think Michigan and the summers up north were so intrinsically part of my identity and where I came from that I had no reverence for it at all. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just thought that was normal. Mm-hmm. And which is probably why I avoided writing about it for so long. My early stories in my 20s, you know, I would have put them anywhere but Michigan, mm-hmm. just because that seemed pedestrian to me. And then when I had an opportunity to move back to Ann Arbor, for a number of reasons, I found that my stories started taking place in Michigan, and they started having a sort of an identity that they didn't have before. And I, perhaps coincidentally, started getting more success, having more success with the stories and selling them, and in particular with this, when the first editors read this, the manuscript, their reactions just floored me, which was, this place is so exotic.
Like, yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, do people from other parts of the country get it?
I think they get it. They get it as a story, I think, quicker than people particularly up north got it and really embraced it. The early reviews that were really good were from outer places like mm-hmm. L.A. and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And it's amazing to me how one of the early things that Random House found with book reps, they had a meeting and they all said, wait a minute, don't sell this just as a Michigan novel. We can sell this in Northern California. We could sell this in Vermont. There are all these places throughout the country where the economy is based on some seasonal thing. Mm-hmm. I did a call-in radio show, and this woman called in from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and said she read the book, and it reminded her of Jackson Hole in
Absolutely.
The winter. You know, so you can't get further away in a totally different... So I think a large part of America that we overlook, and I didn't think this out in any kind of way. I just mm-hmm. sort of like stumbled on this after I'd explored everything else. Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe I'll write about this place right in my backyard mm-hmm. without really no major plan. But, you know, it does resonate with people in a lot of different economies and in a lot of different environments all around mm-hmm. the country who have a similar thing, and it's the details are totally different. But so, yeah, I'd say in a way there's a better response to it outside of Michigan.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Just about every state that you can think of has some sort of town that is vacation land for some while
yeah.
the inhabitants live there all year round. The book cover, you did this.
Yeah, it was sort of a serendipitous thing. I never imagined that I would be doing the cover. I just hoped that it wouldn't be a sunset with a lighthouse. There was a lighthouse. But the editor is Deborah Garrison, who was an editor for... She's an amazing poet, and she's edited all kinds of great things. Like, she edited Three Junes, and... Just a great editor, but I've known her since high school, and this was another great thing that happened with the book. I had my choice of a couple things, and I ended up being able to go with somebody I knew had great credentials, but could also sort of shield me from my own stupid
right.
questions and stuff like that. So I went with Deb, and Deb knew that I kind of drew a little, and she just said editorially she'd like me to kind of sketch a little thing just so she knows where things are.
Right.
And I got carried away up at the cottage, and my wife was saying, I don't think that's what they want. And I said, I know, but I want to know. Where's the laundromat? So I drew this crazy thing. It was about 20 inches wide. And I sent it to her, and the art director was in her office and held it up and said, what is this? This is the cover. And she said, well, it's too large. How are you going to do it? And he found a way to do it, which...
Well, I'm sure
surprising.
That people, I mean, I did. It takes longer to read the book because you sit there, everything that you read, you start looking at the map. Where is this? Oh yeah, and it every time you something new pops up. Yeah. Oh, that's where he lives. No, that's where the bar is. It actually takes you a lot longer to read the book this way.
Well, we found that people were really reading it while they looked at the map. So we actually had to then explain to the paperback division anchor that we'd extracted things because we thought it was too redundant because it was on in the map.
I was gonna
so they put it inside small, but you know everybody so wanted the map. Cover. All the booksellers said we love the map, and you know.
So it's not on the cover.
It's not on the cover.
Is this the cover?
No, the cover is a
the lighthouse.
Life, an inner tube.
Right.
With some, whatever.
I was gonna ask you about the bio stuff too. The inside dust jacket says you have been a college instructor, playwright, copywriter, songwriter, and musician.
Yeah.
Are you doing any of these things now?
I'm still doing some of the songwriting. It's kind of a new life with it. When I moved back to Ann Arbor, I kind of fell in with a more acoustic crowd with some of the folkies and alt country people. And
so you play the Old Town?
Yeah. That's where we hang out every Sunday night. Yeah. And became friendly with...
Chad is an old friend of mine.
Actually. Chad Williams, right. And he's not booking it anymore. No. But Jim Roll kind of wanted
Jim,
to record me. You know Jim?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we went into the studio and we just... I just released this CD, There's Always Pie. And it's 12 songs that I wrote. And Jim produced it. And it was really a great time.
Who put it out?
I just put it out myself under a label that I used back 15 years ago when I had a band called Steve Amick and His Own Worst Enemies. We had a 45 single that was on like college radio stations on the East Coast. So we put it out, and it's on CD Baby and all those places, Tower.
Yeah.
And it's but working with Jim was amazing. You know, he's
Jim is a very underrated guy.
Yeah, yeah. And he's having some problems right now, but we're pulling for him.
We can talk about that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I don't know about that. Yeah. What about the your playwrights?
I did some. I was doing some freelance advertising in Chicago, and fell in with some young crowd that had this group Collaboration, which is now this very avant-garde Chicago. They put on Beyond Plays. It's crazy happenings, etc. But they're a real cutting-edge theater thing, and they have this thing called Sketchbook, and it's just small, short, one-act plays, a festival. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't written anything like that. And I wrote a piece called Jazz Genius, a symposium. And I beat David Mamet and Beth Henley.
Really?
It was my first little play. And won the best playwright thing of that festival. And then I did some one-acts and some more full-length comedies and stuff at the Victory Gardens.
At the Victory Gardens,
yeah.
Wow.
So that was my foray. That was about 3 or 4 years ago.
Are you still doing this?
No, my agent thinks that's a little bit slow, that process, especially where I have to go to the rehearsals and I have to be involved.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's sort of, I don't want to just leave it and go, but I hope to go back to it. It was fun.
Mm.
I worked for some fun people and I like the process. So.
That's amazing.
I haven't done the teaching for 12 years, except for today.
Yeah. So are you making a living as being a writer?
I am now. I haven't done the advertising for 2 years now, since I sold the book. I was doing freelance.
Yeah.
I did
copy editing.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did right out of college. I did 2 years of. I was the creative writing department in a small, you know, community college in upstate New York.
Right.
Quit, lived in my car for a year, and then and I had some short stories. I had something in story in a couple of places, and these guys at this little ad agency, Mad Dogs and Englishmen, which do really avant-garde, crazy, award-winning, usually pot-induced. Advertising in New York, brought me in. They wanted a non-ad guy to do long copy stuff, and they sort of showed me the ropes for a couple of months. I did some Village Voice ads and won a Clio, and then I started doing freelance.
Wow.
It was just an amazing gift to me because the ability to do my own writing was just went through the roof after, as opposed to teaching, you know, just so much more time. And that's how I was able to move back to Michigan. I thought, I'm doing this from home anyway. I could...
Mm-hmm.
So I did a lot of radio and that kind of stuff after that, but as a freelancer.
Wow, you've had a lot of success.
Yeah, slowly. I was 40 when I sold my first novel. If you told me that at 18 or 20, I would have quit.
Yeah.
So it took a long time, but overnight.
We're almost out of time, so what's next?
Next.
Are we doing short stories?
I'm still doing short stories, but there's only one place now to sell them to, the New Yorker. Even the Atlantic Monthly isn't taking them. So I was lucky to get into Playboy before they totally became whatever they are now. But hoping to do that. We may bundle a collection with the next book that they're looking at right now. Random House is looking at the second novel. And then I was just also hired as a consultant for the film, which was just
sold. The rights were sold?
Yeah, to Ubu Productions. The you know, Sid Ubu Sit guy from Spin City and Family Ties and that kind of stuff. He's done a lot of great movies, too.
So is this already in pre-production, that sort of
he's
thing?
He's just working on it. He's just working on it. We just signed the things. He's writer, director, producer, so he's his own deal. You know, he doesn't have to get the package put together. Mm-hmm. He's the deal. So we'll
Fantastic.
See. We'll see what happens. But
are there more stories going to come out of
Wenishkin?
Is that a
Yeah, that's great. yeah, I think so. And also other places in Michigan. I do feel kind of connected to it in a way that I didn't appreciate when I was younger. Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
It's been good.